Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Namaste, my friends. This is Alec Vishal Rubin, happy as can be to be living the summer vibe. We are here to welcome you back to the Yoga Revealed podcast, a true source of yogic wisdom to evolve your practice of yoga. We hope you have signed up for the Yoga Revealed podcast newsletter, as we have master teachers to share with you in the following weeks. If you haven't done so yet, go to yogarevealed.com and sign up. Today, I'm excited to introduce Gina Murdoch, local yoga teacher native to Aspen, Colorado. I met her while tribal marking at the Wanderlust Festival and fell in love with her instant connection to spirit.
My own awakening, it's like the hero's journey. It's like you learn about yourself, and then the journey is to share it. If you do a path and you overcome some obstacles but you don't share it, you're missing that really key component to sort of realize you have this potential you never knew you had, and then to share that you learned with somebody else that's going to need to know what you know, and that's going to help them on their journey.
Tune into this episode as we remember from Gina Murdoch the key components to what brought us into life, that we are truly supported, full of love, and here to serve one another. Enjoy this episode of the Yoga Revealed podcast. Namaste, my friends, and welcome back to Yoga Revealed podcast. This is Alec Rubin, and it is such a pleasure to be connected with you today. And I'm here in beautiful Aspen, Colorado, looking out the windows and staring at aspen trees in the mountains here at Wanderlust Festival, and I'm sitting across from the amazing Gina Murdoch, a local Aspen teacher. And Gina, thank you so much for taking some time to share with us your path of yoga and that which you transmit to the community here through the path and the vibration of yoga. Thank you.
You're welcome, Alec. It's really an honor to be here, and such a blessing to meet so many beautiful souls at a gathering like this, where so many of us come together with that intention of joy and healing and celebration. So thank you.
Yeah. So I was meeting Gina the last 2 days at Wanderlust when I was here with the tribal marking team. And if you haven't been tribal marked, look out for it. Yoga Revealed is with tribal markers quite often. And I was tribal marking Gina up and the whole community, and the wisdom that Gina was bringing into her class was so full of connection. You're a connection catalyst, and you're bringing people together through this point of, you know, sometimes there's moments, at least in my life, where I feel separated, and that's an illusion. And I think that you completely had an ability to just dissolve any point of separation that anyone in the class was feeling from their own individual story that we are all telling ourselves at all these times. And gosh, your words were just bringing everyone together through one single breath, and it was so beautiful. So that is something that I would love to share with our listeners, that which you brought to the table, and that which you bring.
Yeah. Well, I just want to mention, you know, we started this podcast with just taking some moments to be still and to take some deep breaths and to connect inward. And similarly with the yoga classes, I think what we give ourselves this opportunity to do is to create a sacred space, a space of healing. We call that into the space wherever it is. So it can be outside in nature or in a yoga studio or on our mats at home. And what I think is so important is to kind of create a ritual out of the practice. And that's what I've been doing lately more. I shared with you my yogic journey started with, I call it the gateway drug of Bikram yoga, which, you know, bless his heart, Bikram has turned a lot of people onto the yoga practice because he made yoga really accessible with those 26 postures and 2 breathing exercises and very much a routine. They call it the McDonald's of yoga, which, you know, is kind of what it is. It's like this standardized practice that people are teaching all around the globe. And it's a series that tends to be somewhat addicting, and the sweating and that whole experience. So that was the gateway for me. And since I went to that training in 2007 and really immersed in that practice, it's just been a journey of discovery of self. For me, being a yoga teacher, it's really about learning about myself. And then through that exploration and that self-inquiry, I've been able to share, you know, what I'm learning when I'm learning it. So the class you would have taken from me a few years ago would have been a lot different because I was at a different state of awareness with my own self. And I was still, you know, putting things out there. But I would say in the last 3 years or so, I've really deepened my connection with spirit, with that which is greater than ourselves. Mm. And I'll tell you a little bit about that journey if that the right time to go into that. You know, interestingly, when we met at the class that I did here, it was about mantra and movement. It was based on the 7 Spiritual Laws of Yoga, which is a book that Deepak Chopra wrote. And I had the opportunity to meet him about 3 years ago, and I work with him. I'm on the board of the Chopra Foundation, which is a really beautiful nonprofit organization based, it's kind of global, but the mission is to raise consciousness. It's like, simply put, all the issues that we're facing in the world, from starvation to sex slavery to environmental degradation to injustices across the board, is... can be attributed to our state of consciousness. So when you look at things from that energetic level, many people in the world are existing in that very tribal mentality. It's really that fight or flight. It's the reptilian brain that's in charge when you come into that tribal warfare, where it's really based on right and wrong and these type of activities where people are killing each other over their views. So having a mission to raise consciousness as an organization is really powerful. And I know from my own experience, the more that I've had the opportunity to inquire within myself, to do some of that inner work, I feel like I've been able to raise my own state of consciousness so that I can show up differently with people. I've noticed in my relationships, my personal relationships, I'm less reactive. And coming back to sort of the class that I did, and where I'm at right now with my journey, it's so much about cultivating the witness and the observer. And we talked about that a lot in class, and I guided the students through this journey of trying to find that presence within that is immortal, that is eternal, that we could call the soul or the higher self or the self with a big S. I was thinking big S, but it's big S, the big S self. And when I am connected to that sense of self, that's not the small self, not the ego self, there is a, you know, a connection to something that's bigger. And again, it's like this quality of immortality, of eternal. It's like that full infinity symbol that just exists within. And when I connect to that space of knowing that it's not about Gina Murdoch, the teacher, the writer, the, you know, organizer, the wife, the daughter, those labels, I get just like almost ecstatic. You know, it's like this feeling of just pure joy. And it is that feeling of infinite love that is the truth of who we are. And I think all of us are on a journey of discovering who we are. Mm-hmm. Like, I truly believe that's why we're here. Mm-hmm. I think we're born with that innocence and that just pure consciousness. And then as we grow up, there's these layers and layers of socialization and conditioning that really kind of start to block that essence or that light, or that infinite love that we are inside. And we don't even know what's happening because it's just how we live. It's all we know. And then the process of self-discovery that happens for a lot of us, like say in our 20s, when you go to college and you start living on your own and you start making your own decisions and start questioning things. I don't know. That's when it happened for me, is just this inquiry into like, who am I and what is this all about? What am I doing here? You know,
it's such a beautiful question to ask every day.
Yeah. Yeah. And it might be interesting just to walk through that little meditation that I did, because I think even as a listener that we can do this practice of finding that observer, that presence, and, you know, give your listeners an opportunity to tap into that state of being, you know, where it's not about the I that is connected with your roles that you play, but it's the I that is the, like, I am, just simply.
Maybe then we'll end with a few minutes of that meditation.
Yeah, we can definitely do that. I love that. It's cool. It's an easy practice. And honestly, I'm just going to throw it out right now because we're there.
Sweet.
And this comes from Deepak again. And he's been a mentor to me. And he's, you know, he's pretty far out. He wears the funny glasses. And I actually was never that attracted to him as a teacher before I met him and started talking to him and started working with him. And then just being around his presence, there's such a state of flow of just like truly acquiescing to the intelligence of the universe and just letting go. And I think that concept is something we should talk about too, that act of surrender and letting go, because it's almost counterintuitive to our will, right? Which is so much a part of how we live our life on sort of the goal line being sort of our human trajectory to amass some kind of wealth and power and security. You know, the thing that we're trained to do since we're born is to like make sure you have a good job and, you know, you get married and have your kids, and then you just do, you kind of go through these steps. And there's nothing wrong with that. Those are beautiful things and rituals. But to me, the journey is so much more about really inquiring, what is the manifestation of Gina Murdoch for? Like really thinking about the fact that an acorn turns into an oak tree without any effort. It just is. That's like sort of its isness or its beingness. And a little zygote turns into a baby, and a caterpillar turns into a butterfly. And I've witnessed those things actually happening, you know, the baby, you know, just through like a video. When you see what's going on, it's like, holy cow. Miraculous. And so for us as human beings, as mere mortals, to sort of fight against that energy or that creates those things, you know, that intelligence, it's like, it's silly and laughable when you think about it. And so that's what I mean when I talk about sort of surrendering and letting go. It's like, can we stop and reflect and listen so that we can feel those impulses that are moving through us? Because we're part of that cosmic dance. You know, we're part of this creation that is just like bubbling up all around us in mountains and streams and the whole universe. And so we're some part of that, and it's magical and mystical. And I think in so many ways, we've just dumbed it down. We've dumbed down the experience of being human, kind of missing the fact that we're actually spiritual beings having a human experience versus the other way around, which is what often happens, that we feel very human and we go shopping and we deal with those householding kind of items. And then every once in a while we have a spiritual experience and we go like, whoa, what was that? And then oftentimes we kind of shut down. It's not like, let me explore that more. It's kind of like, that was crazy. That was cool. But like, I don't get it. And so I'm going to kind of shut that part of me that is open to receiving these messages from spirit and the universe, because it's scary and it's unknown and it's so infinite that it's kind of mind-boggling. And I think it takes a lot of bravery and courage as an explorer on the path to be willing to open up into that journey of exploring the infinite and like, what does that really mean? And then you ask these questions, who am I? And it's like a rabbit hole, because there's not an easy answer, really. I mean, I don't know. What's your experience? And when you ask that question, does that feel like, do you feel calm about it? Or is there a feeling of anxiety in any way? Because I think some people get a little bit nervous. you know, about inquiring in that way. Yeah.
Who am I? I haven't been asked that in a while, but I do ask myself that a lot. I wake up in the morning and I think that the question that arises is, well, who do I choose to be today?
Mm.
You know, who can I become today?
Yeah.
Who can I look up to in my brothers and my sisters that I aspire to be? You know, I was talking to Rod Stryker the other day, yesterday,
yeah.
And he'll be on the podcast, and he was saying, you know, if you can look at your teachers and say, like, wow, they are so humble, they have so much humility, and they have less fear than me, and that's someone who I strive to be. Like, I want to be like my teacher, who is better than me, more evolved than me in some point, and I want to practice in such a regard, and I want to study under them, so... You know, who am I? I am Alec Vishal Rubin, and I like to joke I'm a crazy Indian Jew. And, you know, I like to bring humor into it. I like to make people smile, and I am a sensation of happiness. You know, I'm a bridge to happiness. Yeah. I think that's a powerful question.
Yeah.
And a lot of people do experience moments of anxiety, like, shit, who am I?
Yeah.
I don't know who I am. But I know I have this light in me that wants to shine.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the moment, though, when we're at our weakest points in life, which happens.
Yeah.
And I think that that shadow work is important.
Yeah.
I talk about it a lot because I've been in the shadow a lot in my life. But I've also experienced so much light because of being in my own shadow. And your time in your life, when you've been just like, whew, in the dark cloud, goodness gracious, what have been the greatest tools for you when asking yourself, who am I in this, like, how have you found solace, how have you found the light and moving forward?
I mean, I think that's sort of like the one of the eternal questions is what's the resilience that we have as human beings, right? Because the journey is so much about ups and downs. It's yin and yang. I mean, nature shows us the opposites. It's cold, it's hot, it's high, it's low. You know, I mean, we're part of that system of nature that is always seeking balance and homeostasis. So for me, in those times that were harder, and I was pretty hard on myself, I would say, probably around 7 years ago for me was a time of great deep exploration of the who am I, really questioning it and feeling really uncomfortable that I didn't know. And being, like you were saying, and just a side note, like just being around Alec, who's here with me, it's such a cool thing because we exchange energy as human beings, and just being around your energy is really feels uplifting and warm, and it is fun. And it's like, this is how life should be. And it's cool to have just a conversation about life. Mm. So honoring you and this offering that you're giving from your heart. But I digress. You know, it's that feeling of purpose. So I do a lot of work in the arena of like well-being. So I have a project called the Aspen City of Well-Being Project. And my mission and vision there is that we create a global hub for well-being in Aspen. And I'm mobilizing all the stakeholders in the area where this is our priority. So we prioritize well-being for the community, we measure it, and we strive to improve it in some way. And so there's a sense of purpose there for me because I'm really sort of, I resonate with that kind of calling to do that work. But, and a lot of other things too that I do now that are really feeling fulfilling from a sense of purpose. But when I moved to Aspen around 7 years ago, I was kind of lost. I was in a transitional period. And that sense of purpose was that thing that like almost hung over me like a cloud where I was like, what, you know, I was like really hard on myself. Like, what are you doing, Gina? Like what, like I had such a fire inside, like so much energy that I wanted to give and share, but I didn't have a platform and I didn't have an audience, you know, to share any of the stuff that I wanted to share. And I just felt like almost impotent in the sense that there was so much energy inside of me, but it didn't have a channel, almost like a river dammed up. And then I went from that phase of feeling really dammed up to like spreading out super thin, where it was almost like a wetland, you know, like all the energy of me was just spread over all this landscape. So I was doing a lot, like I was on all these different boards and doing all these different jobs, trying to contribute in some way. But it was almost coming from, I feel like, an energy source that I would equate to like a coal-powered fire plant or nuclear power. It was like there was a dirty energy source in some way that was fueling my activity, because it was coming from a sense of like needing to prove myself. You know, I was like, I was out there doing all this stuff, but it was like I needed recognition, or I needed somehow to prove that I was worthy in some way at that point in my life. And then the journey for me of self-discovery and just having this connection with spirit, something bigger than myself, brought me into this point where I feel like it's like a renewable energy source. It's like I'm feeling that connection to source, and so it's just coming through me. And the work that I do is coming from a place of joy and of like being of service. And it shifted in a way that was really remarkable and like profound, and almost for me like there's a moment where I remember doing certain things that were, people were like giving me praise and applause and like good job, and it felt really empty because I didn't have that sense of joy. I was doing it because I needed to almost like satiate that feeling of unworthiness or shame or whatever that I didn't even know I had, but you know, I discovered later. And then shifting into that like acceptance of who I am and like honoring who I am and just being really honest with myself and getting quiet, and the rituals of meditation and a yoga practice, a home yoga practice for me has been really instrumental, getting quiet. And then there's just, it's almost inevitable that you start to connect with the presence that is that immortal, eternal part. And when I connect to that, I feel this like radiance and this feeling of love that I feel like comes from this intelligence, this like amazing intelligence of the universe where, you know, everything kind of grows and has this cycle, and like knowing I'm a part of that and letting go of the result. The Bhagavad Gita has this great saying, and, you know, one of many, but it's like perform action without regard to the fruits of the action. And it's very powerful. And Gandhi said the same thing. And the Buddhist teachings say a lot of the same things. It's like, can you have an intention to be of service, one, truly, like from your heart, not because you want to make people like you because you're like doing a great job, but just really giving it up that you believe in humanity and you care about people and you want to serve. So can you have an intention to serve, an intention to, you know, I always like to say, be the change. It's like if something's bugging me, do I want to bitch about it and complain about it, or do I want to take action in some way that's positive and try to shift, and that intention to shift without regard to the result? And I think that's such a huge lesson, is to let go of the fruits of your labor. You know, it's like you have a podcast, you want to be of service, but it's like maybe nobody listens to it, but it's still like you're putting it out there because it's in your heart and you want to share. Luckily, some people are listening, right? <hope so. laughs> And I think sometimes when you do things from that place of love, truly, it's sort of like success is inevitable.
So about 2 weeks ago, I had an incredible blessing to listen to the Dalai Lama and see you, Boulder.
Cool.
And someone had asked a question about ego and service. And he was like, it's interesting in his broken English.
Yeah.
When, you know, the ego says, I serve you, you know, and then I couldn't understand what else he said, but, you know, I Googled it, you know, Dalai Lama, ego, I, and serve, and it just is a unique shift in the psyche and in, like, the soul level of awakening to serve others. I think that that's at least how what you say resonates with me.
Yeah.
On waking up to serving one another truly. Yeah.
I know. I think as humans on this planet, we can just bypass the journey in some ways. Like, because the Dalai Lama has told us that service is the way, because Mother Teresa, because these people that we can look up to as figures that we can admire. It's like you don't have to spend all this time trying to figure it out. Like, just realize that the path of service is the path of enlightenment in a certain way. And yet it's not that simple that you just go to a soup kitchen and have a bad attitude and serve soup. And so it does take that journey of the individual to come to a place where you humbly serve, because it actually is serving you. I love just like the simplicity of giving a hug. Like, I give people hugs a lot, And I do it as much for me as I do for them. But I can sense that a lot of people do not have that like physical touch in their life, or they don't have that level of intimacy. And it's not sexual at all. I mean, it's like, can we connect as human beings? Like you and I did when we met, it's like, here's a human being that I don't even know you, but it's like, we can go into that embrace and sort of soften into it. And all of a sudden you sort of start to connect with the heartbeat and the breath. Mm. And it's just for a few seconds or moments. And it's so healing on both sides, you know, if you're really willing to sort of surrender into it.
And be open.
And be open and not be shy, like that if you hug somebody, they're going to think something of you, or you're over friendly, or you're this or that. I mean, there's it can be overboard. I mean, you have to, you know, have discernment. I think that's a word that I've been really, it's just been visiting me a lot. It's like discernment. And I'm like, okay, I hear you. But like my husband is an amazing man, but he sort of, like, I had to train him how to give hugs, you know, because he'd do those, like, the patting on the back. You're like, oh. And I'm like, what is that? Like, what are you doing? And he's just like, And so I'd make him stay and just, like, hold in there. And he kind of softened. Mm. And now, I mean, he can do it. But it wasn't natural for him. He was uncomfortable.
Wow.
So, and everyone has their own little story of how they feel with people. There's, I don't know, I like to touch people. I like to, I think in the beginning of that class that I did, I think it was the one the day before, we sat in a circle. Mm. And I like this sort of activity of holding hands where the left hand is facing up, which is receptivity. It's the feminine. The right hand faces down and you hold hands in a circle and just breathe. And you start to feel this like line of energy that moves through, because there's this like receptivity and then this sort of masculine side that's like that giving, that pushing out. And it's not hard to feel. And it's just like how when you take a couple deep breaths, it can change everything physiologically, you know, like it's the quickest way to raise your level of consciousness, like immediately, is to take a couple mm-hmm. deep breaths. You know, and meditation obviously is sort of the next step, but just those pauses before you react, huge, right?
It's hard sometimes.
It's hard, yeah, because it's
it just takes practice.
It's practice.
You know?
Yeah.
So letting the practice seep in, at least in my experience, and I find that I'm mostly challenged with my parents.
Ooh. Yeah, it's those. I think Ram Dass says this funny quote. He's like, you think you're enlightened, spend the weekend with your parents. Because like here we are, we're all like yogis and we're just like, oh yeah, it feels so good, chanting kirtan and like hugging. And then you go home and you like have these relatives that are completely different views. They like make fun of the way you look, the way you talk, the way you eat, you know, and it's like, but this is like who I am, you know. And it's like, can you hold the center and be kind to the people that are not willing to meet you where you're at? Mm-hmm. And I think in society, it's like, how can we meet each other where we're at? Like politically, it's just so divisive to sit with someone who is radically, you know, right and on the right side, let's say. And I'm more on the left side of the political spectrum. And I used to be very angry, anti, like almost wrong. You guys are like, how could you possibly, you know,
feel that way?
Be a Republican. No kidding. and then, but I noticed that, you know, you don't get anywhere like that. It's just, it's creating that separation that you started this podcast by saying, you know, it's an illusion. And I think we're here to awaken from the illusion of separation. It's like that basic Buddhist teaching that we're just struggling with all the time. It's like, you're different than me and I'm better than you, or you're, you know, you don't have this. And even what you're saying about the teachers, like when you look up to somebody, which is awesome, it's how we learn, is like by imitation. We're like monkeys. Mm. Our genes are like 98% the same as a chimpanzee. So we're really similar to them. So we emulate the people that we admire. Mm. Sean Korn was somebody when I was sort of a young, new yoga teacher. When I saw her, I was like, oh my God, like, wow, she's amazing. And interestingly, recently I did a practice, it's called positive projection. And so it's this practice of looking at like somebody in your life that you just think is so amazing, and then breaking it down and being honest and saying, where do you have that inside of you? And it's like, at first you're like, nowhere. Like, I'm not like that at all. She's like so eloquent and amazing and just powerful. And for me at this Wanderlust, it was kind of a powerful awakening and experience, because I was like teaching yoga sort of side by side. Sean Korn had a class and I had a class. I'm sure her class was amazing, but my class was amazing too. And it wasn't that many years ago that I was like, she's like a goddess and so far from me. I didn't recognize that I had any of that inside of myself at all. And then like, this was like a kind of a moment of like, wow, you know, there is that. And there's this saying of like, you spot it, you got it. So that stuff that you see in Rod Stryker or whoever some of those teachers are, it's like you see that because there's some part of you that recognizes it. And it's same way with, you know, somebody who pisses you off. It's like, that guy's an asshole. Well, you're an asshole too. You know, I mean, that's where it's all about self-reflection and all about self-inquiry. And so it goes both ways. There's negative projections, which we spend our life doing. We're always like, oh, that's wrong, that's stupid, that's gay, that's this, blah, blah, blah. And then there's the positive ones, which are kind of fun to look at. Like to say, wow, Gina Murdoch, I saw something in you that was really, really cool. And I'm like, awesome. You know, you've got that light in there too, which I think you know. But it's kind of cool to look at it like that and to own your gifts, you know, in a sense. Of like what moves you is something that's alive inside of you. So it's fun.
In your own life, when have you really settled into understanding how to harness and share your gifts?
Good question. Like right now? No. I think it's a process, you know? It's like on every step of the way, I've always been a person who says yes. And I think that's a gift. I think some people are born with like, you know, it's like the optimism versus pessimism. I'm just an optimist. I like to look at what's right in the world. And it's so interesting. And I'll mention my husband again. He's an amazing person, but there's something, his lens is about sort of mitigating risk and looking at like what can go wrong. And for some reason I was attracted to that, which is interesting, but I'm like the opposite. I just have the open mind, open heart. Like it's all going to work out. It's going to be good. And he's just like, whoa, what are you doing? You can't travel there. You're a woman and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, no, I'll be fine. And I don't know why I brought that up, but it was like this idea of the gifts is like, I'm open to invitations. And I think it's really important as human beings that we sort of navigate our path by being aware that people, it's not random that you came up to me, for instance, and it's not random that Wanderlust invited me to teach, and it's not completely random that I'm doing a talk next week. And it's sort of like when you're ready, like the people will come. It doesn't need to be forced or pushed. So for me lately, as far as sharing my gifts, which I feel like is just the my own awakening, it's like we all, it's like the hero's journey. It's like you learn about yourself and then the journey is to share it. If you do a path and you overcome some obstacles but you don't share it, you're missing that really key component to sort of that cyclical journey, which has been going on forever. The hero's journey that Jung talks about, and that, you know, we kind of work through in life. It's like overcome struggle, realize you have this potential you never knew you had, and then to share that you learned with somebody else that's going to need to know what you know, and that's going to help them on their journey. So it's super cyclical and like reciprocal. Like we're all working together as this kind of collective, and I think a lot of times we forget that, and we're like, I'm in it for me, and screw that guy, and you know, it's all about getting to the top, or you know, these are stupid old paradigm things, but we're still seeing that play out in our political system for sure, and the way that we deal with other countries and different things. It's like that scarcity mentality that for me to succeed you have to fail, and it's just a false pretense, because the universe is abundant and infinite, and so there's enough for everybody. And the more that we do all step up and step forward, and the more that we lift each other up instead of hold someone down in the way that I think that I can get further if you don't, you know, challenge me or become a competitor, you know, then we all thrive and we're not just surviving, because survival is that lower consciousness. It's that first chakra, that root chakra energy that's tribal, that's like about just, you know, sticking with your clan and these are my views. And yet at the base also is that awareness somewhere in there that we are one, but it takes that journey kind of upward through the, either the layers of consciousness or those chakras are a beautiful map for that journey as well, to start to understand that. I don't know if that makes sense because it's a lot, but it's like there's just this natural progression of what happens. It's like this againstness and then this awareness and then this coming together. And then I think we're in that space and time right now where there's a lot of people awakening to the fact that there's enough, and like I want to help you, and we're going to work together, and we're in tribes and communities that really we want to serve.
I think one comment and then a question. I really love the metaphor. Again, I think many of us are familiar with the chakras, and I love how you just referred to it as a map.
Yeah.
I had not thought of that, of the chakras as a map.
Yeah.
And that's cool.
It's cool. The chakras are an amazing system to study. I really recommend Carolyn Mace if you haven't read her books, Anatomy of Spirit, Sacred Contracts. I mean, they are powerful, like so interesting, life-shifting books.
We'll definitely add that book into the blog post when we at the end. Very cool. And then this question earlier, you had said how instrumental your yoga practice, your home practice was for you. And with the name of our podcast, Yoga Revealed, what has yoga revealed for you with the consistency of a home practice?
I mean, my husband calls me the yoga queen, and I really resist that because it's just a sort of stupid term, but it's like I've become somewhat obsessed when I found yoga because for me it was like a religion. I never grew up in a household with religion. It was actually more like God had let my family down. You know, that was the energy that I was born into. And so God was associated with religion. And so for me, it was very sort of cynical and like, you know, you got to do this on your own. Like God is not going to help you. And it was based on some circumstances that my family went through before I was born. But it was like for me to overcome that limiting belief that God equals religion and or that God equals kind of a weakness because you're giving your power up to this like preacher who's going to, you know, interpret what the gospel says or that kind of stuff. So I had no relationship with like God or spirit really. So for me, when I found yoga, what struck me, and I was in that Bikram stuff too, that wasn't, it's so physical and there's no oming, there's no like references to any philosophy or texts at all. But what I started to feel in my body was like an awareness of something greater than myself. And so I never would have called it like God or spirit at those times earlier on. But I started to feel something that like awakened in me this curiosity about sort of the infinite and this type of thing. And so as I've progressed on my yoga journey from Iyengar yoga, getting into Vinyasa yoga and training a lot with an Iyengar yoga teacher who was like very deep and very philosophical and very alignment based, I just started getting deeper and deeper into that awareness of I'm not my body, I'm not my mind, because I started to feel into that presence that is, you know, I feel it a lot in the Shavasana when you're just totally spacing out after the physical activity or getting into the meditation a little bit, like kind of floating outside of the body, like noticing that energy that is me is not contained by this physical form. So what yoga revealed for me, which is like the greatest gift that so far in my life I've ever received, was a relationship with that which is greater than this like human form, my mind and my body. It's like truly a relationship with spirit, which is so precious. And it's interesting. It's just like it brings up a lot of emotion even because it's like, how did I live all those years without knowing that? You know, it's like I didn't even, it's like I had my eyes like sort of barely open to the life experience. And I know that there's so much more that will occur and that I can open up to. So I'm just really dedicated to the path. I'm like, I'm a seeker, but not in like the needing to know, but just like the joy of the journey. Because every day that I practice on my mat, and I do get it kind of more on my own if I do my own practice, because it's like much more inward than just listening to a teacher tell you what to do. Mm-hmm. Which is also just a beautiful and wonderful experience. But when I take the time to be on the mat and just sort of explore my own body and just go with what feels like what's moving me, I get closer to God. And there's nothing to me that's more precious than that, because I feel like that's who we truly are. And I'm starting to awaken to that awareness. And, you know, it's like you get hit with that and you want to share it because it's like it's good. It's good stuff.
How do you share that with, well, if I were to go back not even 6 years ago, I would have been a high skeptic. And I've always been optimistic, but I would not have been open to the beliefs or the perspectives that I currently embody and I currently embrace.
Mm.
So, say you're talking to Alex 6 years ago, 7 years ago, or there's someone of such a stature in your class, your classes, here at Wanderlust. How do you present to individuals who are open, who are receptive, this God channel, this spirit channel, this download, as well as to others who are maybe are a little less receptive, but trying to keep the you get it.
Yeah. I mean, it's a tapestry that we weave as a teacher, and I think what's so important is that saying that I told you before that it really struck me is just like have that intention to serve without being attached to the result. So when you look at a class, there is that quality in this skill of reading the energy in the room. So there may be, I mean, I really do try to tune in, and that's why I do this invocation before I start teaching or practicing. It's like, let this be of service. And it's sort of like I'm giving it up to God, Spirit, and I'm saying, please work through me in some way that I can be of service for the highest good of those people that are here. And I trust, just like you invited me to be here right now, that those people that show up, they need to be there for some reason. And what I'm going to say, because it's not about me, it's coming through me if I'm, you know, sort of channeling in a way that if I've cleared the vessel. You know, if I have like a lot of shit going on in my personal life, it's going to be hard for me to sort of receive the messages. I'll have like this static. And so I'll be thinking. And there's some classes where it's all from my head. And it's a fine class and people will be like, thanks, you know, great. But then I can just feel it sometimes, like, and it's a lot of times actually when you ask to be used as a vessel for spirit, that's exactly what this universe is looking for, is for people that are willing to do the work to clear the channel so that they can stand there and ask to be of service and then to just trust. Like, I never know what I'm going to do in my class, like, ever. I try to prepare. Like, I have all these papers in there that I was like, I'm going to prepare. Like, my body just so resists it because I never know what it's going to feel like to stand in the class. And so I trust that those people that are there, that are seekers, that are on the path, are going to receive something because I'm there, because I was invited to be there and I'm there for a reason. I trust that. And then there's those people that are skeptics that, and there's nothing wrong with that, because you and I were both in that place, it sounds like, not that long ago. I mean, I was really cynical and I would make fun of like yogis that look like you and me right now, like wearing the scarf and the mala beads. We're like so in it. And we're just like, oh geez, that's cheesy. But what I think and what happens is you try to meet people where they're at, right? So if it's a whole class of like total beginners, I'm going to take it easy on the like full prayer and like heavy duty, just like God and spirit, you know, because that's discernment. You know, that is like reading the energy. It's like this person has never, ever had an experience before. So I'm going to make it fun and joyful and like enjoyable just to like roll around and feel their bodies. But then you can sense that some people are more open. Like the class we did here, we had this beautiful musician that was just like so spacey and far out. And so we just started the class as if we were born from the stars, which we are. And I just kind of went with it because we were in black light and it felt like we were in the womb of creation in some way. You know, it wasn't a stretch to think that. And then taking that journey together, you know, you can, there's like a thread. You can kind of sort of feel if people are with you or not. And I think the discernment is knowing if people are with you or not, you know, like thinking you got this, like, this is awesome. Like I'm rocking this. And then you're looking around and people are like, huh? Like you got to let that go and then sort of lighten it up or whatever. You know, it's just, it's such a cool, fun, I feel like it's like conducting an orchestra, but without the music sheet in front of you, it's more like the music is coming from somewhere and you're feeling it. And so you're putting it out there and hopefully the bodies are responding. And if they're not, then, you know, to have that awareness to sort of step back a little bit, lighten it up a little bit, do a little like freeform dance or something. I don't know.
You know, when you were teaching in the beginning, well, your Dharma talk, if you will, had amazing, gosh, like this download. You know, I felt it, and I was a part of the community. I was part of the students there, and we were receiving. And it was very similar to last night listening to Xavier Rudd, and you know, just observing how potent his ability and will and openness to channel divine spirit through his instrument of voice and vibration of sound and instrument, literally. I think, you know, they were both very connected in how you guys were transmitting. And what I noticed, a common thread was, you know, like, yes, we all have ego, and it's all important. You know, I think that it is. Who am I? Who are you? Who is Xavier Rudd?
Yeah.
But in that, the sheath of where the spirit is coming through the vessel to transmit what is being downloaded. Ooh, it's such a hard thing to verbally explain because it's visceral.
Yeah.
It's so visceral. How do you continue to let go of this part of the ego that does want to come out? Because, you know, we all want recognition, and I think that's important. I think that it's beautiful to see and be seen.
Yeah.
And download.
Yeah.
And share.
Well, I think it's so much. I mean, great question, and just like kind of feeling into what is true. And first, I want to comment on that idea of like what Xavier Rudd is saying, and a lot of what I hear Sean Korn saying and Rod Stryker saying, and whether it's Ashley Turner or Carrie or any of these amazing, I think, amazing teachers. I think there's a fundamental truth out there. And so it sounds so familiar in every religion and every kind of spiritual teacher. It's like their own version of the same stuff. And so what Marianne Williamson says, or even Tony Robbins, or, you know, whoever these like self-help like gurus of people are like, wow, it's like, it's the same stuff with a little different twist. So my version of it, I'm going to tap into the truth, because the truth is like, literally, we're all tapping into that awareness of that infinite, of that we are one, of that, like, what does namaste really mean? It means that we all come from the same stuff, and separation is the thing that's the illusion. So we're all tapping into that universal truth. And I can say it in a way that just is flat and just say, guess what, everybody, we're all one. And it'd be like, whatever. But there's a part when you start to connect, and whoever it is that's channeling it, like, we all have our perceptual filters because of where we grow up. You're Indian Jew, I'm Italian, you know, Catholic, I guess. And it's going to come through my filter and come out in such a way that it's going to resonate more with some people than others. And then other teachers are going to resonate more with other people. And so I think your question about how is not to worry about how, it's just to trust that you are a vessel. We all are a vessel for spirit, because we are these spiritual beings, and that to trust that the version of this truth that comes through you is going to hit the people that it's going to resonate with. And it's so much about energy. I like to do that round of rolling ohms in the beginning of class. It's so funny because often it doesn't work and people just stop. And I'm like, no, keep going. So, but when you keep going, there's this moment where it's just like 60, 70, 80, 150, 200 people, like, it's just one sound. And like, you see the sound waves kind of synchronize. Mm. And that happens with information too. Mm. So I may be talking to you and my version of truth is coming in, and it starts to hit where it synchronizes or it resonates with you on that level where you're like, oh, I feel that. Mm. And you feel like an emotional, like, visceral reaction. Like you said, somebody else who's a powerful, amazing teacher may be transmitting the truth, but it just isn't going to resonate on your wavelength just the same. And so that teacher is not going to be someone that you're like super, you know, connected with as much. You may recognize them as, you know, a wonderful being or whatever, but it's like they didn't strike you. Mm. And I think it's cool. Like, I'm an unknown person, like, on the yoga circuit as far as like teaching at Wanderlust and stuff. And I think it's really cool because there's no expectation. It's like nobody knows who I am. Mm. I imagine in 10 years from now, if I'm still doing this and I'm doing, you know, I'm doing my job, which is clearing the channel so that I can do this work, that maybe there'll be more people and they might know who I am. And then there might be an expectation, like, when I go to Sean Korn's class, I'm like, I want to feel into like this intensity that she brings. And honestly, I went to her class yesterday and I was less affected, in because I've sort of shifted. Like, I needed that so much at a certain state in my life where I was like, what she was saying was just hitting me and just like resonating so deeply. And now, it's not to say that it doesn't, but it's not the same, right? Because I've discovered a truth within myself that knows, like, you know what? Like, I get that. That's amazing. And I'm gonna channel it in this way. And that resonates more with me. And then there's people that might show up for that. So again, it's so much about just like being true to who you are and being quiet enough to understand like how you can tune that tuner, you know, when you're on the radio and you're like, there's static, 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 and then you get the signal. So that's what it is to be a teacher, is to just keep tuning so that you can find the signal within all the noise. And I think the noise is really like all those books that I've read and all the other teachers that I've learned from, and thinking that they all know better than me, and that for me as an individual, like, who am I to go out there and say anything? I don't have this training and I don't have this like background. I haven't been practicing that long. I mean, I was doing Bikram yoga not that long ago. Like, who's going to ever want to listen to me? And it's like trusting that the more that I tune that tuner and I find the signal, that whatever comes out is going to be something that might resonate with somebody. And if it does, great. And if it doesn't, I don't take it personally. And I'm not like, oh, I suck so bad. Like, anyway.
You know, yesterday I was beating myself up about something. It was just an old story. And my best friend, he came up to me and was like, can you forgive yourself just a little? Not a lot, but just a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's...
I love friends like that, right? Yeah. They're just like, dude, okay? And to think, like, I always think you're going to get it. In the past, I thought, I'm going to get it one day. Because, like, if you're a seeker on the path, it's like you get these little bits and you're just like, yes, I got it. And the moment you think you got it, you get knocked on your ass. Like, at least in my experience, it's like from a high of, like, kind of an awakening, like a moment of sort of expansion. The next day, I can wake up and be in, like, such a funk, like, where I have no recollection of what that feeling was anymore. I knew it happened, but I'm, like, I'm just so hard on myself that's... stuff in my brain is negative, and it's like I'm, you know, we're bringing ourselves down all the time. And there's something about that. It's like, again, we have to overcome these kind of weird impulses for us to kind of judge ourselves a lot, and then we judge others. So my work right now is so much about being aware of judgments and really forgiving myself for making those judgments about myself and other people. It's hard.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great segue to kind of talk about judgment. Just even right here where you were talking about the other teacher whose teachings maybe don't resonate with you, it can be hard, instead of being like, oh, this teacher's teachings don't really resonate with me, and be like, I'm judging you because your teachings don't resonate with me. I find, at least in my own life, like, I will most definitely say, I judge. I don't want to be someone who's like, I am not a judger. I have no judgment in my life. Like,
it's really...
I will not say that.
Yeah.
I would be lying, you know, but I do feel it's important in my own experience to acknowledge out loud when I am judging. And it's very vulnerable for me to express to my beloved brothers or sisters, like, I'm judging you for this experience, and I want to release myself of those chains, you know, and to acknowledge judgment.
Yeah.
That to me is like a little more, that's like taking the steps to compassion, right? You know, so how is it when we find ourselves judging, what are in your life, like what's the practice that you embrace when you find judgment arising in the mind?
Well, I mean, it's just this path of awareness. And so with anything, until you shine a light on it, it has control over you. In a sense, it's like we all have the ability to write our own story, let's say, in life. But until we know or are aware of our behavior, we can't really shift the ending. We can't shift the way that we're going to tell that story, because we're not aware that that's our story. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So when I notice, by becoming aware, by slowing down, by looking, it's, you know, really called self-inquiry. It's like, let's try to name those things. Like, if there's a stressor in my life where I'm feeling stressed and I find myself saying, I'm upset because, or I feel angry because, or I feel frustrated because, it's like, can you unpack that? And then you just ask why. A lot of time there's blame. And when there's blame, there's judgment. And so looking at the judgment and saying, okay, I'm judging my husband for this behavior. And then the immediate thing to do when you're aware of it is to look inside and say, where am I doing that to myself? Because the only person that you can change is yourself. And we've heard that 1,000 times. But once you like really understand that, like really understand that, you can become free of trying to change the outer circumstances to make your life feel more comfortable or more, you know, in alignment. And it's really tough because it's so like, I think we're conditioned to believe like ever since you're a kid, it's like, not my fault. He did it. You know, you're blaming your brother, your sister, your mom, your dad for everything. Like since you were aware and able to talk, like, no. And so like to take it away and shift and just take, it's like this radical responsibility. It's saying like, anytime that I feel myself being in judgment, which you start to become really aware of once you have a practice. And again, it's like the same practice of observation and being a witness versus being reactive. So it is a practice, just like yoga is a practice, meditation is a practice. It's a practice to be aware of how you respond and then how you show up. So I find myself like naming it. I'm like, I am upset because he didn't do this. And I'll go like, you know, he's not being very, he's not being a good listener, for instance. And then I'll just take it instead of like yelling at my husband and being like, you just are not listening and la la la. I'll just stop and pause, take a breath, turn it around. Where am I not listening to myself? Immediately I feel something where it's like, gosh, you know, I've been in my mind feeling like I needed to take a break or not go to this meeting that feels like such an obligation or whatever. And it loosens the tension for a moment. It's kind of like once I reveal that the judgment is actually about my own self versus about the person I'm projecting it onto, then I become free to react in a different way instead of in anger or reacting in like, I don't know, I just say like these lower level emotions in a sense of just like blame and chastising and demoralizing somebody because that feels like kind of good, self-righteous. It's kind of like, oh, I have compassion because I feel that way too. I haven't been listening to myself, so I can understand how come he's not listening to me. And it just takes some of the charge off of it.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's answering your question, but it's like, it's a ritual of stop, observe, breathe, respond with compassion. So it's like sober. You have this sober response where you can just be like, whew. And you notice it because we're aware of our bodies. It's called somatic experiencing, or like, okay, I'm feeling the heat. I'm feeling the tingling. I'm feeling the tightness. Mm. You become aware of those signals and then you can stop instead of just releasing that aggression and that thing on somebody else. You can just sort of like neutralize it a little bit with that ritual. And it does take a little practice and awareness, but it's not hard. And it's an amazing tool to just like be cooler in general.
You know? Lighter.
Lighter, friendly, and like truly friendly. Not just like fake friendly. Yeah. Like, oh, I love the world. Like if you don't do that work on yourself, you're just like a puppet. You're just saying the words, but it's not coming from inside. And you can sense it.
Mm.
Right?
Yeah.
It's like bullshit. So, yeah. Mm.
Last question, Gina. Thank you. What would be one little golden nugget of wisdom that you'd like to offer to our listeners, to the people on the path, being human?
Ooh, you human beings, let's just say you are beautiful. You are infinite and immortal, and don't forget that. And you are infinite love. And I will just share my little epitaph or something that resonates with me. And I encourage everybody out there to write that which you might see on your gravestone, or take a moment to sit quietly and look and think about what would you want people to say about you at your funeral, no matter how old you are. And you want to live into that path, like the person that you know you want to be, start living that way right now. So it's like, what are your priorities? Is it about your family? Is it about your dharma? Or is it like all about your job and just like sort of hanging on? It helps, you know, not to live in that space of regret. If you realize, like, this is who I want to be at the end of my life, I'm going to start living that right now. And it takes a little practice to, like, just sit and think about what that might look like. So for me, I wrote this little, like, poem that was like, this is who I am, or this is what feels true for me right now. And it's it goes like this. So it says, beauty. I am the dancing flame, shining bright like the sun. Heartfelt joy is my compass, spirit my vessel, gratitude the sea on which I sail, grace. So for me, it's just like, this is who I am. I want joy to be my compass. I want spirit to be my vessel, and gratitude just to be that, like, effervescence, like, every moment. I'm grateful for every breath. Yeah. Just living into that. That feels true for me. So namaste. What a gift.
Namaste, Gina. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. That was joyful.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of the Yoga Revealed podcast. You can learn more about Gina Murdoch and her community in Colorado at AspenYogaSociety.org. This organization is dedicated to curating and amplifying existing events that serve to the greater good. You can learn more at her website, AspenYogaSociety.org. This is Alec Vishal Rubin, and we are looking forward to sharing more teachers from amazing festivals like Wanderlust and Hanuman Yoga Festival. What a gift it is to share one-on-one conversations with yogis who have dedicated 30-plus years of practice into their life. Stay tuned through yogarevealed.com and sign up for our newsletter so we can share with you all that we're working on. Until next time, my friends, love life and shine on. Namaste.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.